Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back to the conversation today, and we're dealing with the Cannabis National Industry Association, and we have with us today in the conversation Andrew Klein, who is the chairman of the Public Policy Committee of the association. And I thought it was important because they've been talking about the vape issue and other things, and so we have Andrew Klein here, who is the chairman of that committee, to talk to us about at this moment more information about the public policy and what its goals and objectives are. So Andrew, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the Cannabis National Industry Association, and more specifically, your public policy committee. What is it? What was it formed to do?
Sure. So the National Cannabis Industry Association is the largest national trade association for the cannabis industry. We've got about 2,000 members, both license holders and ancillary businesses. And our organization does three things around three pillars, basically. Community, education, and advocacy. On the community side, we produce four big trade shows every year. We do some regional events called caucuses, where 100 or so people come and hear from either myself or our head of government relations. And we try to just, you know, create opportunities for people to network. On the education side, we do substantive policy discussions at our trade shows, and then we do webinars and other educational initiatives. And then on the advocacy side, we've got three lobbyists in DC who focus exclusively on lobbying Congress for bills, you know, like the SAFE Act in states. And then I lead the policy council. The policy council, and you can find out more information on our website if you click on policy and then policy and advocacy and then policy council at the top. You'll see bios and pictures of everyone who is involved. We have about 30 members, scientists, doctors, lawyers, cannabis entrepreneurs, others who have equities in the cannabis space. And basically we are doing a number of things, but primarily we are drafting white papers on issues that are of import to the industry, and then building advocacy campaigns around those white papers. So by way of example, about 2 weeks ago, we released a 45-page paper, a plan on how we think cannabis should be regulated at the federal level once descheduling happens. It's a pretty comprehensive plan, regulatory plan. No one else has ever put anything else like it. And next week, we're launching that paper in D.C. at an event on November 12th in front of members of Congress and congressional staffers and members of the cannabis community in D.C. To sort of, you know, summarize our plan and take questions about it. The policy council meets once a month by phone, and then four times a year in person.
We're talking with Andrew Klein from the Cannabis National Industry Association, and he's head of the policy council. You put a lot of things on the table there about all the things you're doing. I'm fascinated as your organization looks forward. We seem to have hit a rough patch in the industry, in the sense that the vaping issue, which we'll talk about in another interview later, but the vape issue, the pricing of cannabis, the confusion in the states of regulating and who's going to regulate, and Los Angeles wants to rescind all the licenses and start over again. It sounds to me like it's an industry in chaos. Is that a wrong assumption?
No. Well, I don't think it's an industry in chaos. I think that, you know, we are dealing with some challenges, and like any other industry facing challenges, you know, the industry is trying to figure out what the proximate cause, you know, when we're talking about the vaping issue, the industry, you know, much like the CDC and FDA and others, are trying to figure out what the proximate cause is so we can figure out what a reasonable solution is. But I see the industry galvanizing and really trying to do the right thing. You know, it's hard. I mean, anytime you face a crisis, and you know, this is a big challenge, right? We've seen over 1,000 deaths. We've seen over 1,000 illnesses and over 30 deaths. So we want to take this seriously. But again, you know, and we want to act responsibly. But we also need to understand better what the proximate cause is. And we just don't have those answers yet from the federal government.
You know, it's interesting, all the stuff that I've been reading recently, we're speaking with Andrew Klein of the Cannabis National Industry Association. While I've got it, Andrew, how do people follow you or find information about your organization?
So we do, you know, if you get on our website and you sign up, we've got a database of over 50,000 people, and we do weekly blogs. I've been doing quite a few on the vaping issue. So you can just sign up and you'll get information every week from us. I'm also on LinkedIn and try to post there as much as I can. And then NCIA is on Facebook and Instagram as well.
What is the web address for the association?
It's www.thecannabisindustry.org.
Super. Thank you. You know, one of the things that I've been reading is that while you and your organization are working to deal with the, let's call them the honest people, we have a group of people who are not honest and are probably not members of your organization. And, excuse me. It appears that the illegal cannabis sales are greater than the legal sales. And is it hard to deal with policy when the legal people don't have to follow the rules or even the suggestions of your organization?
Yeah, I mean, look, the illicit market is a huge problem, particularly in California. But, you know, we're seeing cases all around the country. So just a couple of weeks ago, a woman and her two sons were arrested in Wisconsin for filling 33,000 vape carts in their garage. And, you know, we're seeing the unregulated, untested, illegal market, you know, infiltrate what is a very regulated, safe environment in 33 states. And it's really troubling because, you know, if you're not testing products to know whether there are heavy metals or pesticides in the products or mold, it's impossible to protect the public health. And so we need to do a better job to displace the illicit market. I'm actually working with a commissioner right now on the Cannabis Control Commission in Massachusetts on trying to bring law enforcement together with the private sector to try to tackle the illicit market and try to displace it. You know, the other problem with the illicit market is that they're not paying taxes. And so their products are cheaper. And so people, you know, are attracted to lesser expensive products. But those products, you know, could be quite unsafe. As we're seeing with the vape crisis, you know, people adding vitamin E acetate or coconut oil or other thinners to cannabis oil without knowing what happens to those molecules when they're exposed to high heat and you're ingesting them in your lungs. You've only got two lungs and you can't replace them. So.
Right. So what do you think as a person in charge of looking at policy, what do you think is the largest challenge, biggest challenge, most important challenge, whatever you want to say it, for you and your industry facing today?
You, Yeah, that is a tough question because there are a lot of them. So
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I mean,
No. Look, I mean, everything starts with the fact that cannabis is a Schedule I drug. It is a completely unsustainable situation that the federal government put us in 1970 when Richard Nixon created these schedules and classified cannabis as the most dangerous, most addictive substance, along the lines of methamphetamines and heroin. I mean, it is crazy on one hand that the federal government owns a federal patent for the medicinal use of cannabis, but on the other hand, they say there's no medicinal value. And until we can get beyond that Schedule I status, it makes everything else really hard. So if we were able to deschedule, we would fix a lot of the problems like 280E, like social equity, like, the myriad problems that are facing the industry, the lack of research, if we were to just deschedule. So my view is that is the biggest obstacle facing the industry right now is the classification of Schedule I.
Super. We've been speaking with Andrew Klein, who was the chairman of public policy committee at the Cannabis National Industry Association. Andrew, thank you for joining us. And once again, how do people get in touch with your site?
www.thecannabisindustry.org.
Thank you for joining us on the conversation.
Of course.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Well, joining us today on the conversation is Andrew Klein, who is the chairperson of the Public Policy Committee of the Cannabis National Industry Association. And we had him on the show previously, and we invited him back because we ran out of time to talk about all the issues that were important. So welcome back to the conversation, Andrew.
Appreciate the invitation.
Thank you, sir. The headline issue of the day is the vaping crisis, with over 1,000 people being injured and maybe 10 to 12 people so far dying from the use of these pens. And we have the government in some states like Massachusetts banning them altogether. Other states are considering them. We don't know, even the CDC and the FDA doesn't know for sure what is causing the illness or the injuries or the deaths. They're still trying to investigate that. And I know that your industry has a position, so I'd like you to spend a few moments talking about what you as an organization believe needs to be done to make vaping safe.
Sure. Yeah. Just to clarify the statistics, there have been over 30 deaths. It's a real issue. We believe that the vast majority of these injuries and deaths are attributable to the illicit market. So the first thing that we need to do is to displace the illicit market and make sure that people have the opportunity to purchase regulated, tested, reliable products. That is by far the most important issue facing the industry today. And so the industry needs to collaborate with law enforcement to help them weed out these bad actors that are adding additives, that are not testing, that are selling products that are unregulated, and steer people toward the regulated, legal, tested marketplace. Now, with that said, there are, other potential issues. When we vaporize cannabis, we need to make sure that we're doing it at a temperature that doesn't change the molecular structure of the cannabinoids. And so I believe most doctors think that, 350 degrees is the right temperature. But if you're using a vaporizing battery with a button on it, you need to make sure you're not using the highest heat, because that can be dangerous when you're heating an element to a degree that's higher than what it's meant to be heated to, if that's proper English, you change the molecular structure and it becomes dangerous. And so we want to make sure people are using low heat when they're vaporizing, even if it means that they don't get the biggest bang for their buck. when they're taking a hit. The other thing we need to be mindful of is the hardware. We want to make sure that, you know, some of these devices that are being manufactured in China are not using materials that could be harmful. It is possible that some of the materials that are being used in the manufacturing process could be leaking heavy metals or leaching heavy metals. So we want to make sure we're using quality products and that we are inspecting the facilities in China that are manufacturing these products.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm just going to tell our eyes, we're talking with Andrew Klein from the Cannabis National Industry Association, charge of public policy. And I hear what you're saying, and I'm not taking any side in this issue. I don't know how does the consumer know when they buy the vaping cartridge, whether it's got too much THC in it or it's got heavy metals or pesticides? There's no way for them to tell because the illegal people don't put much on the label. And they're buying, I guess, Andrew, based on price. If it's cheaper in the black market, they buy it. And I'm wondering, with the issue that's happening with vape and the 30 deaths and 1,000 people being injured, has that changed the behavior of American consumers?
I don't know that anyone has studied whether or not it's changed the behavior, but, you know, look, my recommendation, and I think it's just a logical one, is if you want to buy THC, go to a licensed dispensary. Don't buy products off the street. So what's happening right now is people are manufacturing labels and packaging that look legitimate. And so if you're buying something from, you know, a drug dealer off the street and it looks legitimate, it could very well be that someone just, you know, made this in their garage and put it in packaging that looks legitimate. You need to go to a licensed dispensary and buy tested, regulated products. That's the only way to be certain that the products you're buying are not dangerous.
You know, in a previous conversation that you and I had, you talked about how the government has a role here, and one of the roles of the government is that their fees to the dispensaries and the taxes they're levying on these products makes the illegal product considerably less expensive, and that's why people buy it. How do we convince the governments to reduce their fees and structure to make the legal product as competitive to the illegal product?
No, and that's a great question. Something we do address in our most recent paper is, you know, we need to keep taxes, to a minimum, right? We need to be able to cover the regulatory costs through the taxation, but we need to make sure that we're not, forcing people into the illicit market because taxes are too high. So, you know, particularly when the federal government comes in and regulates, we need to make sure that those federal taxes, aren't high enough to discourage people from buying regulated product. It's a balancing act, but it's one that we need to pay attention to.
Now, you mentioned your report. Is your report on this issue available on the website?
Yes. So if you go to www.thecannabisindustry.org, click on Policy Council, Policy and Advocacy at the top, and then click on Policy Council. Once you scroll through all the headshots and bios of the members of the Policy Council, and you get to the bottom, you'll see a library of papers that we published over the last couple of years. The first one you'll see on the top left is the most recent paper on how we think cannabis should be regulated once descheduling happens.
What is your what's your feeling in the time we have left? What is your feeling about whether or not the Congress is going to ultimately deregulate cannabis?
You mean deschedule?
Yes.
So, you know, I think ultimately it will happen. I think we're still a couple of years away. I think the Republicans are starting to get more comfortable with certainly with banking. And I'm fairly confident safe banking will pass in the 116th. I don't think that there are enough Republicans in the Senate supportive of descheduling and full legalization quite yet. So my guess is that, you know, that's going to be a couple of years away, probably when we have, if we have a democratic president in the White House.
So the government and including the members of Congress are not there yet. Is that what you're saying? They're still mulling it over, trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the MORE Act, which calls for descheduling and then provides for social equity provisions, has, I think, about 54 co-sponsors in the House. So, and then that bill is sponsored by the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. So, you know, to me, that's an indication that people have not quite wrapped their heads yet around full legalization. And they're more interested in the more incremental approaches like states and safe banking. But we'll see. You know, I mean, all the Democratic presidential candidates, with the exception of one, have come out in support of descheduling and social equity provisions. And so, you know, we'll see what that debate looks like during the 2020 general election. It could be that you know, Trump comes around to that position and drives the Republicans in a better direction.
Yeah. One last question. It seems to me that the presidential candidates who have come out in favor of descheduling of cannabis are not addressing a lot of other issues that are related, whether it's 280E or banking. And I'm wondering if their support is more of a political promise as opposed to a real action step.
Well, by virtue of the fact that you support descheduling means that you support a 280E fix, because the reason that 280E exists is because of the Controlled Substances Act. So once you deschedule, 280E becomes a non-issue. Banking becomes a non-issue. So all the candidates that are supporting descheduling are essentially saying they support a fix to 280E, they support a fix to the banking issue, they support a fix to the social equity issues. All those issues flow from descheduling.
So you mentioned that people can log onto your website and you mentioned that there's a way that they can get regular updates from the association. How do they do that?
If you download the paper that we've been talking about, it asks you to input your email address, and then you'll automatically start getting updates from us.
Terrific. We've been speaking with Adam Klein, Director of Public Policy Group at the Cannabis National Industry Association, about vaping and the challenges of deregulation. Andrew, thank you for joining us in the conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back. And we're done. It's 12:53. Thank you, sir. It was a great interview. As soon as I know the air date, I will send you a copy of each show.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. By the way, let me ask you, is there anybody else in your organization that you can think of that I should have contact with to ask questions about?
I talk to Morgan
every other week.
Yeah, I mean, you should talk to Morgan. He can connect you with our lobbyists in D.C. Just one suggestion. It's the National Cannabis Industry Association, and it's the Policy Council. So I don't know whether you can correct that or not, but and then it's Andrew Klein, not Adam.
Adam. Yeah, I was looking at Andrew and I said Adam. I apologize. I'll see what I can do there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.